Hello and welcome to the Blind Shots Podcast. I'm your host, David Hill, coming to you from the windy corner that is the 17th tee at the Sheep Ranch, amazed that I've managed to put my ball under the only tree for 1,000 yards in any direction, and this is Season 5, Episode 11. This is the fifth offering in this season's Americans in Oregon series, featuring Matt, Fred, and I discussing the highlights, lowlights, and headlights of our trip to the Oregon coast last summer. This is the Sheep Ranch episode. Perched against the coast up on the bluff, just on the north end of the property next to Pacific Dunes and Old Mac golf courses, the Sheep Ranch struck me as a bit different than the rest of the courses we'd played there. A much ballyhooed Coir Crenshaw masterpiece, it's more familiar to other golf experiences, I felt, than the rest of the Bandon Dunes courses. Sure, it's in a unique, almost magical setting there, up exposed to the elements on the Oregon coast, but it was flatter, with fewer visual disruptions. Felt like a core golf course to me, with long sight lines, largely unbroken in most directions. Gentler, calmer ground led to a gentler, calmer golf experience, at least on the morning we were there. To wit, later that afternoon, the caddies told us that their buddies were sending them texts that the winds were upwards of 40 miles per hour at Sheep Ranch that afternoon, where we'd played a few hours earlier in, at worst, a nice breeze. I didn't play particularly well at the Sheep Ranch. Combination of golf trip fatigue and the greens being in the middle of being regressed, tricking my eyes and my hands. But that didn't take away from the joyful, relaxed experience. The brilliance of the rounding and the green complexes is obvious as one walks the property. That the course lacks traditional sand bunkers is as much practical function as it is artistic flair and expression by the architects. That land is all utterly exposed to the winds, which would undoubtedly reshape and empty the bunker edges and anything you placed inside the bunkers. So instead of flying sand, you get grass bunkers that exist there now that really seem to fit the course, fit the vibe of the place. Before we dive in to a deep dive on the Sheep Ranch, a reminder that the Blind Shots podcast is made possible without commercial interruption or the influence of influencers by my day job as David Hill Realtor with Rector Hayden Realtors. Help people sell their houses and find new homes, as well as helping investors and businesses with their commercial property needs here in Central Kentucky. Spring season is here. I'm already seeing an uptick in activity and requests in our residential market here locally. So if you have a need or even just have some questions about real estate, please reach out. You can email me at davidhill@rhr.com or give me a call at 859-333-4517. I'll be happy to get a conversation started with you. And now, with that out of the way, a few fun tales and thoughts on the Sheep Ranch at Bandon Dunes with Fred and Matt.
God.
Well, let's do Sheep Ranch today. The Sheep Ranch, that was our final morning in Bandon Dunes. And probably a good thing, too, given kind of what we found out there with regard to exposure to the wind and things like that. I was skeptical of Sheep Ranch. I don't know what you guys knew about it ahead of time. You both mentioned that you didn't do a lot of research heading into this trip. But I was skeptical of it, maybe only because it was the new hotness. It's the most recently completed course out there. Now, by the time this airs, Shorty's will have opened the second par three course, not a pitch and putt, but it's in the neighborhood there with Bandon Preserve. But Sheep Ranch was the hot new thing. Everybody that had been out there, a lot of people were saying it was their favorite. It was the new kid on the block. I personally liked it. Now, Fred, were you familiar with the original iteration of the Sheep Ranch? I think we've talked around that a little bit here.
So that was the course that was there that the locals kind of threw together. I don't know how many holes it was, but you could go out there and play all, like, the guy would let you into the area and you would take down the chains on the roads and you could drive out there and play golf all day long, right?
Yeah, the story, what I know of it from Derek Duncan, Feed the Ball. Mm-hmm. A shout out to him. He's now with Golf Digest. one of the, he's their architecture editor, but he's one of the OG golf podcaster in the golf architecture space. And he told the story. He went out there. So Matt, I don't know if you remember this, but you would, because it was a different owner. Like even now, I don't think the Kaiser family and Dream Golf own all of it. I think the guy was kind of holding, the original landowner was kind of holding out. He wanted to be brought in as a partner on whatever got built there. And what existed there before, there were basically just greens. I think they mowed some tees, but it wasn't like tees hadn't been constructed. And there was no routing. It was just a collection of greens. And you would, you could get the number from the resort, like the abandoned proper. And you call this number and say, hey, we've got so many guys. We want to play the sheep ranch tomorrow. You'd be like, okay, $100 a head. I'll meet you out there. I'll let you in at whenever, 8, 9. And you'd show up and it would be this locked cattle guard gate. And he'd let you in and say, I'll be back at dark or I'll be back at 7 to lock up. Make sure you're on the other side of this gate. Have fun. And that was it. There was no scorecard. There may have been some rudimentary maps or something, but basically it was just a collection of greens out on that bluff. I don't know. And Fred, maybe you know, where there may have been actual sheep out there. I don't know how the, that grass, there's enough water in the air all the time. I would think the grass might get a little bit. So somebody had to knock it down at some point, but it was this kind of wild, play, make your own adventure thing, which to me is, might be the most romantic, pure form of golf out there. You know, maybe forgive my love of short courses and cross country golf. That's heaven to me, where you have a core, uninterrupted, unbroken up collection of golf space. And, you know, what I found there after that first hole at the Sheep Ranch now really kind of honors that. That was, you know, the things the Sheep Ranch has going for it is that it's a core Crenshaw design. And those fellas have not let me down yet. Kapalua Plantation, Dormy Club, Sand Valley, the Sandbox at Sand Valley, Bannon Preserve, and then as we played later, Bannon Trails. But all of those have been high quality experiences. So I was converted. It didn't become my favorite right away, but first impressions, getting down, they get you right to the water and they start playing you down that coast. And just the vistas, the first thing that struck me was just that big contiguous green space and the long views. So Matt, I'll throw this to you. First impressions out of the Sheep Ranch. This is now, for listeners that have been following along closely, this is the first round of real 18-hole golf after Matt's second round of his life. So the day after, you don't want to be the guy that follows the legend, but we head to Sheep Ranch. So first impressions, kind of what struck you, big overall things that struck you about Sheep Ranch, Matt.
First impressions, I would say, had to do with the fact of what it followed. It is, we played Pack Dunes the day before and went right into Sheep Ranch, and they are very, very different. Not quite as different as Trails, but just, you know, Pack Dunes is big and epic, as we said. And, you know, they both obviously had a lot of room around the water. Sheep Ranch used it well too, not as well as Pack Dunes, I don't think, but very well. But yet very, very different courses. So that was kind of my first impression was, okay, this is, you know, we're up, and Sheep Ranch is right next to Pack Dunes, right? It abuts Pack Dunes on the north side of Pack Dunes. So like the land is right next to each other, but it felt like a very, very different experience from Pack Dunes.
Fred, you got a follow-up there on sort of first impressions that morning. And I thought it was key that we played in the morning. You know, that'd be a fun place to see a sunset. You watch the big orange ball fall into the sea. You could really probably see it there from best of any of the courses. But we got out before the wind got up. So Fred, yeah. Little first impressions.
To Matt's point, and I believe my caddy, I have a lot of stories about this one. But the caddy met me on the first tee, and first things out of his mouth were, are you holding together, buddy? And I was like, we're here. And he proceeded to tell me, like, you know, at this point, I was lucky. I had the, you know, I kind of like won paper, rock, scissors a couple of times, and I got the same caddy throughout the week. He was awesome. Really good dude. Meshed well. Have nothing but great things to say. But he would tell me a little bit about the course and what they had done and you know, a little bit of the history. So he gave me a couple little nuggets here that first tee in the clubhouse area, that is the highest point on the coast for the resort, that first hole.
Yeah.
So once you get, like, if you remember the first hole, it's kind of out of a little chute. There's a little clump of trees on the left.
I got intimately familiar with those.
Yeah, so did I. But that's one of my stories for later. So I don't want to, like, you know, go right. I don't want people to tune out early on. I want them to wait a little. So you come up and you get to the fairway where those trees kind of are and start to end. And if you remember, you walk down the hill, you know, to the green, right toward the coast. And if you would look over to your left, it's kind of breathtaking. You know, if I would have had the mindset and I could have, you know, thought of anything other than putting one foot in front of the other and not falling on my face, I would have taken like 15, 20 pictures of that. It truly was probably one of the more photogenic opportunities I think I saw there, and I didn't take a picture of it. And again, that probably had a little bit to do with, you know, the sun, you know, off in the distance and way out over the water was still kind of dark. The darkness was being chased away, so to speak. It was awesome. It was a great stepping off point for, you know, that course and probably the rest of the day. It was had a lot of fun that day. It was a good day.
It was, and it is a nice reveal. One of my favorite things in golf here on Blind Shots podcast, obviously, is a wonderful reveal. And you do come out of that chute, and you're at the northernmost edge of the Bandon Dunes experience. I mean, it's a lengthy bus ride over to that, you know, a legitimate 10 or 15 minute bus ride to get all the way out there to the clubhouse. And then, yeah, you look and you turn and you're looking over the 18th fairway and you just see emerald green and some shrubby gorse in the ocean as far as you can see, which is really nice. You know, it was of the Bandon experiences, and really even is probably the most wide open and connected golf course, 18 holes. Like, you take the cradle out of it, something like that. That's a 10-acre footprint. But for an 18-hole golf course, it's probably the most gentle land with some elevation change, and just the being able to see all of the golf course. I mean, maybe with the exception of some of the links courses, like an Ely, where you're kind of, once you get past those first two holes, you know, the whole, it kind of lays out there in front of you, but you could see all of the sheep ranch. And if we'd been there middle of the day, you could have seen the kind of the symphony of groups all around you making the way around the course. But being first out, having the place to ourselves was really, you know, that's kind of breathtaking to see that. And I thought it was the most gentle land of anything at Bandon Dunes. You know, you had the walk, yet as you mentioned, the high elevation change. So you had the walk down to the coast from the clubhouse, and you did that twice, 1 and 10, you know, and you walked your way back up to the clubhouse on 9 and 18. But otherwise, you're kind of out there in the flatlands. So, Fred, was it the easiest walk? I mean, granted, it is our last day there, but was it the easiest walk at Bandon Dunes?
Buddy, I don't know. It was not the easiest walk at that point in time.
Right.
After everything else, after my near walk away from golf during our afternoon at the reserve.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that was probably one of the low points in golf probably in my life. I was not sure I was going to make it.
Now, I would not have forgiven Core Crenshaw if they cost Fred golf, like right? with preserve. I would have held that against them.
Yeah, that was an event. But probably thinking back on it, it probably, I mean, is the easiest walk. I mean, it is by far probably, as you said, the only, got four holes of any significant elevation change in my mind. The rest of it is, relatively flat. There might be some overall slope one way or the other, but I don't think it's very drastic. So I would have to agree with that.
You know, that you get down to number one, the green abuts the ocean, and then you kind of play in a diagonal. You know, it's great layout. Again, you never have the same directional angle two holes in a row. You know, that's kind of, Core Crenshaw does a masterclass on it. Really, the whole band and experience, all of those. They're up on the bluff, and they're links like golf because of exposure and the land and all that, but they're not an out and back where you've got the wind with you for nine holes or something like that. The first wow moment for Fred sounds like in the fairway. For me, and Matt, I want to get your thoughts on this, but for me, it was the magazine photo hole. You know, you got a little par three, and then you come back in, you have another little par three, and then you get what has colloquially been kind of known as a cape hole, where you've got this diagonal shot, where it's the now famous shot you see on all the magazines. I guess it's number six there, I think, five or six.
Yeah. It's six, I think.
Yeah, six. And it reminds me so much, Matt, of it's two at North Berwick. It's just taller. You know, you got to play off the beach at North Berwick. Like that's that shot. You cut the corner. You take on as much risk as you want. You play safe inland. It's number four at Pack Dunes. It's number one at Macrahanish. That is the real, like, and having been there now, I know why it gets all the pictures and all the videos. It's just kind of a magnificent thing. So for me, I think that was where the caffeine kicked in. It's like, oh yeah, this is cool. This is, now I know where I am. What was the moment that the course grabbed you?
The moment you're speaking of was certainly one of them. And part of the reason that was even more so the case, two at Berwick and this one, for some reason, it's the only time that I ever choose to hit a fade is when right is death. Right. And so, I mean, I think I was about a foot and a half inside of the cliff there. So I, not only do I get the picturesque, from the front or from the tee box, but you walk around the ravine and I go up there and I get the joy of figuring out my ball is in fact still on the playing surface, because the beach in this case was, a couple hundred feet down from the playing right. surface instead of, 4 feet down from Berwick. But then I get to go stand over my ball and say, I hope I don't swing too hard and fall forward, because I'll be 200 feet down in a second. That was one of those, okay, they're going to really use this coastline up here. Like as well as Pack Dunes used it, and I've raved about that, I felt like you could get closer to the edge at Sheep Ranch than you could at some of the others. Like, I mean, it was like the fairway was, fairway, 3 feet of rough and a drop off.
There were no dunes. Like, it's a much gentler rolling contour. Like, there were dunes, but it wasn't green sites tucked up against dunes. It was, as you're saying, it was the coast. It was a flatter piece of land, gentler rises and falls of slope. All the contour was in the greens. It wasn't the eye candy of packed dunes or even abandoned dunes, where you had this mounding to kind of play around in these, mountains really. So yes, there's more exposure to the coastline, more of a kind of a bluff top experience, definitely less Scottish feel to it. You do kind of curl in when, it has a little North Berwick feel to it, because you get down at the end and a couple of holes you play away from the water, and then you kind of come back and down in a corner, and then you head back in. That was, I guess 8 and 9. Yeah, I guess it's 11 that comes back to the clubhouse. But it was more coastline, and it was, one of the things that's unique about Sheep Ranch is there's no bunkers. There's no sand bunkers, I should say. They create their hazard with contour and grass and gorse. And I remember getting the reports when we were playing later that afternoon at Trails, that wind was blowing 40 at Sheep Ranch that afternoon. So, my thought was if you had sand bunkers, you couldn't keep sand in them, or you'd have to build faces so tall on two or three sides, nobody could get in and out of them if you were trying to protect against wind erosion. Did you know ahead of time, or did the light bulb go off, Fred, that, hey, there's no bunkers on this course?
I didn't know that until roughly the first or second hole. And the caddy told me, okay, as we were walking down one, he told me. I'm not sure. I mean, I may have realized that later. I would like to think I would have anyway. But I didn't know that going into it. And to one point that we were talking about, the dunes, I felt like the other courses use the dunes as, maybe protection, we'll call it, like we said, around the greens and, off the tee boxes and stuff like that, or the fairways, I'm sorry, to frame the fairways. A lot of the bigger dunes that we saw on the Sheep Ranch were almost aiming points from the tee box. My caddy used a lot of those, like the caddies did on our trip to St. Andrews, like aim at that, white church tower on the left side of the fairway. He would tell me, he's like, you see the second dune up there on the right? He goes, go right at that. So I feel like the use of those dunes kind of changed dramatically from almost the further north you went on the property. And there was not very many of them, to your point. And I don't think that, they weren't using those as those awesome, green sites like we talked about on the last course we played. So it's just a little different. And maybe that's because, maybe that was because when the guys were out there making those original greens we were talking about, they didn't have the chance to do that. And maybe they took some inspiration from that.
Well, and I think that they did an excellent job of using the fewer dunes that they did have as the vertical elements. Like, there were lots of times where you were hitting right over a dune. I mean, yeah, maybe you were aiming for a dune in the background, but there was plenty of holes where you're hitting over a dune, or it's starting to sneak into your flight path a little bit. And even though you're not going to hit it, it kind of looks like you're going to hit it. So I think they did an excellent job with the, again, they didn't have a ton of them, but it seems like every single one of them's in play for it.
Yeah, it's a good camouflage job, producing eye candy, something that really isn't going to mess with the strategy of the hole necessarily, but to have something to look at and just to mess you up if you're not careful. That said, it was a course that maybe better than the others used kind of more subtle, more gorse. There are no trees on it. It's not tree lined other than I think maybe 11 heading up that hill back towards the clubhouse. Little stand of trees, but for as open as it was, there were angles and slight elevation changes where one I'm thinking of, I thought 8 was a really, really good hole. That was one kind of back in the corner. You're playing away from the water, and you've got to hit out to the left. And the further left you have, the better you can see the green. If you hang right, you're kind of flirting with a gorse bush, but you've got just a little flip wedge over top of it. Once you know where the green is, almost kind of a Tobacco Road element to it. Like, it's disorienting, not having direct line of sight, which for as kind of sprawling open land as it was, they did have several where the part of the green or one layer of the green was obstructed if you weren't in the proper place in the fairway. So That's a familiar design, Ellen, from Cora Crenshaw, that, you know, hand down from the masters, from Pete Dye, from Alistair McKenzie, all of those guys. And the no sand bunkers thing, you know, it's an, on the card, it's an easy course. You know, it rates not that difficult. I think probably more so than any course out there, the wind is the primary defense. Like, the greens are good greens. They're Cora Crenshaw now. They were in the process of regrassing them. I think the wind and the spray was more than they initially could take with the initial grassing. So that was, I couldn't putt to save my life. I had a lot of greens and regulations, and I had tons of three putts, had one memorable four putt, just could not get any speed, grain. So, which is funny because old Mac was going through the same thing, and I tore those up, you know, just hit it hard towards the hole and had a great day. So, how did the greens treat you, Matt? I see you kind of nodding in violent agreement.
Yeah, no, I mean, the difference between, you know, we came off packed dunes where it felt a little bit like putting on linoleum. It was quick. But it was, you know, a straight putt stayed straight.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it was like putting on glass a little bit. And then the greens at Sheep Ranch, again, as much as the look of it was a totally different experience from packed dunes, trying to putt on those greens was an entirely different experience. And it's not bad. It's just, if you hit the same putt at packed dunes that you hit at Sheep Ranch, you are 20 feet past the hole. Like, it just, you know, whether it's a grain thing or a speed thing or whatever it was, it just, it putted very differently. And I struggled with that a little bit for sure.
Brad, did you make the adjustment?
I don't remember anything being way out of the norm there for me. I don't think I, when I hit the green, I felt like I hit it pretty close, but when I missed it, you know, slow greens and when you're chipping, you can be pretty aggressive. I don't think I put myself in many situations where I had, you know, long putts. If I had a long putt, you know, it was a green regulation, and I said, like you said, whack it up there close. So that didn't play too much into my day playing the Sheep Ranch. I didn't really struggle with that too much. Now, when we moved on to the next course, you know, on that day, I had a little trouble, couple holes. I was just pounding them way past everything. So, that took a little bit, but, you know, that may have been just luck and more than anything else. So
Fred, what you're telling me is the problem is that I don't hit my irons very well and I suck at putting. That's basically what the problem came down to.
Hey man, you do you, bud. You do you. You do you.
It's all right. We're all friends here. This isn't, hopefully, you know, these are issues that I know I have.
You know, it's the easiest course on the scorecard. With an interesting mix, lots of par threes on the front, lots of par fives and par fours on the back. I almost felt like, for me, it kind of lulled me to sleep. I kind of fell in love with the views, with the long views and the gentle nature of it. You know, there was nothing other than the ocean reveal. You know, there was nothing that you really said, wow, look at that, necessarily. It was just a good, comfortable golf course. Maybe a couple of holes where if you got in trouble, you could, you know, if you're in the wrong spot, it looked like a really amazing challenge. So I don't know if that was just me. Fred, I know you scored pretty well. It was fun walking, watching you going around there. I was struck a little bit. You mentioned that Pack Dunes and Old Mac are right next to it, Matt Chaney, and you looked down there and there's a canyon between the two properties, small, you know, little drainage canyon into the ocean. And it looks so different when you look down that coast. I went back and looked at my pictures and it was all the south facing photos I've got, just seeing all of that gorse, covering the hillside was just, I don't know. That was just something that got me. I'm trying to think how to ask this. Fred, what you mentioned, you had a couple of stories. I don't want to save everything for the end. So, was there a memorable shot that you witnessed or that you saw or a good caddy moment? This was the day that I had the Singleton caddy. I had the Pro V out there, so that took some getting used to. I lost my security blanket of the past few days and had I drew the short straw to have the single caddy. So tell me something good. Tell me something fun, Fred May.
I believe it's 17. You know, we talked a little bit about six being that reveal for you guys, that, you know, teeing off over the little beach area, you know, out, and you kind of fade it back toward, you know, all the trouble is over there on the right. Well, 17 is one of the few examples of the same kind of hole layout, but going the opposite direction that I've ever played
with a ghost tree.
Yes, right there on the corner of the abyss, right? There's like, it's growing and you can see roots hanging out of the cliff going over. So we get up there, you know, we've played a couple of these holes that, you know, kind of bend back to the right, you know, with the water and stuff. So by this time, you know, the caddy and I, you know, we're familiar, right? So yeah, always cautious, Fred, you know, those previous holes I'm playing way out to the left and I let it, you know, kind of bend back into the middle of the fairway. And he just looks at me. He's like, Fred, this one's easy. He's like, aim at the middle, cut it away. We'll have a great shot in. And I hit a beautiful Matt Chaney draw off of that tee. And it was
screamer,
only based on the fact that I could not feel anything below my nipples. I was so tired that I have no idea how to explain it, but my feet felt like, you know, Bozo the Clown, you know, those like ginormous, you know, like clomping feet, you know, like mm-hmm. takes like a minute to roll from heel to toe. I grabbed onto the caddy's bib at one point and he said, "Let's go, Fred." And I mean, it was bad. It absolutely bad. My downswing had started and damn near stopped before any weight transfer. I mean, even back. I didn't even like get like, back.
Nope, not going there. Nope, not going there.
So I was just like flat-footed with the big Dumbo feet and I came down and then all of a sudden my brain says, "Hey, I don't think anything's moving." My nipples are like, "Hey, we're fine," but nobody else responded. And all of a sudden, then I was like, "Oh shit." So boom, beautiful draw. Beautiful, right toward that stupid tree. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, I was like, "Huh, that's different." And literally milliseconds after I said it, my caddy said the exact same thing. He's like, "Huh, that's fucking different." And I mean, it cleared the beach. But as we said, no trees, couple ghost trees. I was right under that ghost tree. It had no swing.
I was right there with you. I did the old, I stepped on my pitching wedge trick to see if I had enough loft, if I had enough clearance. You know, that was the trick I got taught as a kid. I don't know, kind of a redneck version of, do you have enough club to get over? I had never really used that. Do I have enough club to stay under? So yeah, I remember being this is a ghost tree that is, a nice tall trunk, I don't know, maybe 20 feet of tree up there, but one giant protruding branch pointing right at the clubhouse comes over, I don't know, what, 30, 20 feet of the fairway?
At least 200, yeah.
Looks like, you know, it looks like where they want to hang the green flag to start the race. So, yeah, that made for an interesting next shot. I think you clipped, did you clip it or did I? Somebody nipped it.
I did. I tried to go under it. But I clipped it, and unbelievably, I hit the underside, the further the round part of the branch away from me, and actually catapulted it forward to the front of the green.
Yes, I do remember you making birdie there. That was
yeah,
a little bit of sideways. Maybe you should draw all of them, Fred.
If I could, I would, but I don't think that's healthy. I mean, I really don't think you're supposed to put yourself in that kind of situation.
I will say one of the fun things, I was in a group I didn't play with you, Matt, having John Mark, our friend, our mutual friend John Mark, in the group. And it was, he is someone that makes an aggressive move at the ball. He is our probably the long he's the longest hitter of our group when he connects. He's also the most sideways. Like, Clay's kind of harmless. You know, if he messes up, he hits one straight down, or it gets squirrely sideways. If John Mark misses one, it's one of those violent duck hooks, or it's a block push, where people aren't going to know where he's yelling for from. Like, that one's just going to get on a little comet ride and go. So Sheep Ranch for him was the perfect course, because there, you know, there were opportunities he could load up, load back and come through. And, you know, leaving the clubhouse from the turn, he hit it. He was almost off of the next fairway adjacent to the left. Had a great angle into the green. He's long enough. It was like, no problem. Like, okay, I'll just hit my 4-iron or 5-iron from over there. Did you have any – was that in your mind at all? Were you just swinging kind of wild? Because you're a big hitter too. Or did you kind of stay – play it straight and play within the confines – kind of working off store credit from Pack Dunes the day before?
Yeah. I don't know that I put that much thought into it. What I did notice, I felt like I felt a little bit at the loop. And also, like you said, in the middle part of Ely, where I was kind of taken aback by, you know, it's almost the anti like Forest Dunes, where it's cut through a forest and everything is framed and you know exactly where the fairway goes and, you know, what's fairway and what's rough. On Sheep Ranch, like, they'll mow 80 yards worth of stuff to the right and left of the green that's the same height as the fringe. Like, yeah. It's one just cut, like, yeah. They plop, you know, you've said this multiple times, you know, they just plopped a green down in the middle of this big vast area. And yeah, they changed the topo a little bit so that, you know, there's a runoff down, you know, down the side of a small hill or whatever that helps separate the green from just being in the middle of the field. But, you know, at the loop, it was like, I don't even understand where I'm supposed to hit it sometimes, because everything looks like everything else. And it wasn't quite that. This was a little bit more defined, but not a ton more defined. So, you know, with John Mark, he can sit back and rip it and be like, whatever, I'll hit it from three holes over and be fine. And I had, you know, I knew that I could miss it, and, you know, but I also was, I think I spent a lot of time trying to figure out kind of where the hell I was trying to go. And, you know, it's an odd thing. American golf, you're supposed to hit your drive into the fairway, which is, you know, about half an inch shorter than the rough that's next to it. And then you get up there and the green is defined by a couple of bunkers around it and, you know, maybe a pond on one side, but it's defined. You are staring at the green and you know where, but this, you know, sort of like a green in the middle of a bunch of stuff that kind of looks the same. And it's just a little bit, you know, off-putting, not in a bad way, but it throws you off your game a little bit, I think.
Fred, I wonder if this isn't where you having played competitive golf growing up really helps you. I don't know if you were captain, if you had a pre-shot routine. Because what Matt is talking about is exactly what got me at Sheep Ranch. That, and it's the same thing that happened at the Loop, where I lacked the discipline to pick a small target and aim small, miss small. Like, it was so wide open that I couldn't, or I was too lazy or distracted to pick a small target and hit it there. Which is something that when I'm on, that's something I do. Like, I'll pick out a tree in the distance and usually I'm going to be within 2 or 3 yards one way or the other of that target line. And that was just not the experience there. Is that something? Talk to me a little bit. You're the senior golfer of this group. And you, I will say, you have the most mechanical pre-shot, most dedicated to your pre-shot routine of anybody on the golf course of our golf group. So I wonder if that's not your cheat code a little bit in a situation like that.
You know what? That's funny because I don't think that I would say that about myself. I guess a pre-shot routine like that, that's, you know, you've had for a while, you don't even think about it. So that's kind of an interesting thing for me to think about.
Got him now, Dave. Yeah, now he's going to be thinking about it. Next time you guys go out, it's going to be in his head. Way to go.
Yeah, it's a shit good show. Job. Good job. But yeah, I do have one. And you know, the whole aim small, miss small thing. I mean, I guess that's part of it, you know, but I always felt like, you know, I feel like I always have to do that because we said before, I'm not the longest hitter. So if I miss a fairway, I'm not going to get that extra 10, you know, 15 yards roll, you know, that I might need. And plus it's really hard to hit, you know, a 5 iron or a 4 iron, you know, out of the rough, you know, if it likes to get down in there. There's a difference between hitting a 4 iron and, you know, Matt Cheney's 8 iron, you know. I guess to your point about a pre-shot routine and going through that, I was told growing up that, you know, you do that, you make every shot the same. So no, you know, if it's the first hole or the last hole, if you're losing or you're winning, it's the same shot, you know, so it shouldn't matter. So you go through the same thing, you think about the same thing, and you swing the same way. So I guess that might be a bit of a cheat code on something like that. You know, I don't have an answer for you because, like I said, I've never really thought of that before.
Yeah, so ingrained, he's so money, he doesn't even know it, Matt.
I don't know about that. That's not the angle I was going for, but hey, everybody now, needs a villain, I guess.
Yeah, we have ours. Thank you. you're also our ambassador. You're also, yeah. Did you guys have any deja vu out there at Sheep Ranch? I did, and let me tell you why. There were Core Crenshaw, they don't do templates, okay? It's not a pickup and copy. People used to criticize. There's some designers, and even Pete Dye, you know, the his TV holes at a lot of his courses are basically the same footprint. You know, you're going to have a cut the corner over the water hole. You're going to have a par three with some water, you know, something like that. We all know the way Harbortown finishes, the players, lots of those courses. Core Crenshaw trends towards that with the handful of courses I've played. Like walking up, I guess it's 11, walking up towards the clubhouse. Like that felt just like the shape of it, the way it hit my mind felt just like a hole at Dormy Club. Almost two of them, really. And later that day, I found the same thing that on the back nine, I don't know, like 15 or something. I was like, oh, this feels just like it was 14. It was the one after the big drive the green hole, kind of go back and up to the right. It's like, oh, this frame's just like something I've seen earlier today or at Dormy. So there were moments at Sheep Ranch that a green or the way a bunker kind of laid, the angle that it laid in relation to the fairway or the green is like, oh yeah, I've seen this, or this is Kapalua. Did you guys get any of that, or no is a perfectly acceptable answer?
Why is Matt laughing?
I don't know. Why are you laughing?
I'm letting you go first.
Oh, he has thoughts.
Yeah, I'm nervous. No, I don't I did not get that. I did not. So, Matt, the floor is yours, my friend.
So the funny part is, did I have deja vu when I was out there? Maybe, but I don't necessarily remember it. When I had deja vu was when I was looking at the flyover today to remind myself of things. And I got this sense of deja vu that I had played somewhere that looked exactly like this, and I could not place it. And Dave, it's Dormy. You just like, I just went through Deja Vu on this podcast right now.
And Sand Valley.
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. That was the other one.
That was the other one that I thought. Yep.
Yeah.
But yes. So the answer to your question is yes. And I may not have known it at the time, but in retrospect, absolutely. And yeah, right. And I think it's like you said, it's not exact templates. It's not like, I mean, the peat dye water down the left side that I will always hit it into because I'm a sucker.
16 looks, at Kearney Hill. Yes, I fight that same battle. Yes,
that's the one. You know, that looks incredibly the same. With this, it's a little more of like, it feels the same.
Yeah, it's a framing. It's like the way that the periphery frames the whole, because the greens are different, right? The greens are all unique challenges, but there's something about just the way stuff is juxtaposed and laid out that you're like, oh yeah. And it's almost kind of a comfort. It's like, okay, I remember kind of how to play this hole. That's the beauty of a template hole. It's like, okay, I know what to do or what not to do here. If you've played them, if you can recognize them in real time, that's the real struggle for me is like, you know, we're at North Berwick and all of a sudden I'm like, oh yeah, that was the Redan. I wasn't supposed to hit it over here in this little coffin bunker. Oh yeah. This is the crazy Beer Ritz green and I'm right in the cleavage. This is going to be spectacularly awful, right? Like it would have been nice to know that 30 seconds ago. And maybe because Core Crenshaw, their signature design feature almost is, other than being kind of natural land, you know, minimalism, moving as little dirt as possible, it's really wide. You know, it's a width and angles. If you're on the key side of the fairway, you've got an advantage of the angle. We don't hit it hard enough or far enough to just overpower a golf course like a tour player would for something like that. But that was something that I just wanted to mention because I'm glad it clicked on you a little bit, Matt, because some of those features we've seen before and relatively recently with Sand Valley and with Dormy, you know, that those are courses that made nice impressions. So,
and I knew it was something in North Carolina and I was like, is it Mid Pines?
No,
it doesn't look anything like Mid Pines. What the hell is it? Yeah, no, it's Dormy. You're right.
No, Dormy was great. And Fred and I got a second. We were some of the last of the general public. You were coaching basketball, and we had the privilege of going down there. They were finishing up all the clubhouse, all the new stuff before it went completely private in the Dormy network. Tremendous course. Would be fun. That would be a fun course to walk. You'd be not twice in the same day, but you know, once it had little cut through paths. You know, where the cart path might take you, you know, 30 seconds around the stand of trees, there was a caddy path that, you know, would cut through a lot of the stuff at Dormy and, you know, Sheep Ranch being the whole banding thing, being without carts. That's a nice skill for the designers to have. The last thing I'll throw it to you for comments in a second. The last thing that I really kind of enjoyed about Sheep Ranch. I like that patio, you know, it was probably the most low key, kind of laid back. We grabbed lunch there before we headed over to Trails. Big sandwich with hot peppers and mustard on it. You know, it had a little grill, short order cook station, and just really kind of unassuming standard patio furniture. You could see kind of the ocean. You weren't right on the 18th green. The 18th green was challenging. You know, I was in a bunker, greenside bunker, which made for quite a challenge. You had to nip, you know, we had to nip one, Fred, and that was fun. But just kind of the space at Trails may be better, but that services three courses there. And it's got a crazy, you know, kind of a high-end Asian restaurant over at the Trails Preserve Shorty's Complex. This was just kind of pub fare, fit our speed just right. It was really nice just to sit there and grab some lunch. So with that, I'll open it up first to you, Fred. Any closing thoughts or other stories you want to get in under the wire?
Well, to your point you just made, I'm not a big breakfast guy, but the whole, as you called it, short order cook style that they had going on there, I cannot remember what I had. It was some sort of breakfast sandwich, obviously, but it was delicious. And that really, really helped about three or four holes in. That really,
Little
got
energy
the
burst.
yeah, it didn't unfortunately last as long as I wanted to. And then, we kind of sloped downhill there toward the last third. But
Wasn't there, was it like a pastrami or a corned beef burrito or something?
That was
It
lunch.
was
That was the big lunch thing. It was a pastrami Reuben, I think, with like a mustard and
yes.
peppers and stuff. That's what
Yeah,
our bus driver said to get.
yep, it was exactly that. Yeah, because we started asking all the bus drivers what was good at the, they're like all known for something. And she's like, oh, yeah, I get a, yeah, some kind of,
Hot pastrami.
yeah, whew, it was delicious. My biggest complaint, would probably be the patio area and how far down I had to go to get in the chair. Because
There
that
we
was
go.
very uncomfortable. It was very uncomfortable. I stayed there way too long because I wanted everybody to leave before I got up, because I made noises that were
Yeah, you'd
not
already sent the
normal.
caddy away. You didn't have anybody to help you.
And had no caddy bib to hold on to, no nothing. Matt gave me the look. He knew. I mean, he gave me the look. I was there for him Monday morning, or the next morning of golf. I was ready to hold his hair back. I saw him walking around outside with no shoes on, like doing the toe squish in the cold grass, trying to get grounded to the earth. I knew. I was there for him. So he kind of stayed around, gave me a little pull on the back of the chair to, yeah, I appreciate that, Matt. That was very, very nice of you, my friend.
Full start, Fred.
Yeah. No, that's it, man. Now I tell you that, I say this a lot on our trips and stuff, and maybe it's just because I'm not in shape, and maybe that's, another thing that I should, focus on to get in better shape. But if I were to go back, I would want to play the Sheep Ranch and Trails again. I think that those were my two favorite courses. If I remember correctly, I think that's how I ranked them out. And obviously I was probably in the least or the worst physical condition of the trip. And I seem to say that a lot. I always feel like the last couple courses we play are the ones that I want to go back and play again because I really liked them and I didn't play as well as I wanted to. So that might be, another lining, podcast in itself. But I have nothing, I don't think I can point out anything else. I think you guys did great about pointing most of it out. It was really fun. The par threes, I love the par threes because I didn't feel like any of them were the same club. Some of the other courses, wind excluded, they all kind of fell into that kind of same, eight or distance range. There was, I mean, I think I hit, 8 iron on a couple of those, and a couple of them were, a buck 90, 200 yards. I always like that. I always like a little bit of range in the par threes. The par fives all felt like actual par fives, even when you didn't have any bunkers or any trees to get behind. They were just, they were. I saw a lot of guys playing them as 3 shot holes. I like that. I thought the par fours were a good range as well. There wasn't a lot of the same thing out there. It's one of those courses they say you hit every club in your bag. So I really don't have anything horrible to say.
Matt, any closing thoughts? Anything to add to that monologue?
I have two closing thoughts. The first is, ladies and gentlemen, if you enjoy discussion of Fred being tired, stay tuned for our next installment at Band and Trails, because that will come up at least a couple times. Though I will say he did outlast one other member of our group, which I'm sure we'll get to in the next installment.
Catastrophe.
Second one is, That was a disaster. Yes. Second one is actually a question to you guys. I came away when I was thinking about it. I came away with the thought that of all of the courses at Bandon, Sheep Ranch was the one that I thought narrowed the playing field between the low handicappers and the high handicappers. I thought that Sheep Ranch was for the low handicappers, one of the harder ones to really play well and score well. And don't get me wrong, if a two handicap is on his game and playing well, he's going to tear up, pretty much any course we play. But for the most part, the guys at the lower end of our range, I don't know that there was a lot of them scoring particularly well. And then I thought the guys at the higher end, I mean, Clay's our highest handicapper, and he kicked my butt. And I didn't feel like he was playing exceptionally well. I think part of it might be the distance. It's not a particularly long course. Part of it may be that it's, everything rolling together there in the middle allows you to miss right or left without getting punished. I don't know. But did you guys walk away feeling like this one was not gonna, it favored, made things a little bit better for the high handicappers and was a little bit harder for the low handicappers to go low?
I think the answer to your question is the width of the holes, the width of the course. The fact it was kind of hard to lose a ball. Like, yeah, there was the odd ravine, and the odd gorse bush, but even if you were wildly out of position, you could go find your ball and it's so wide open, you're probably going to have a sight line for where you needed to go next. Which is, Clay, when he connect, if he's getting off the tee, if he's connecting, even if he's kind of spraying it, it goes far enough. His only problem is when he hits one down hard, tops one violently, off a tee box. So, for the higher handicaps, and even Chad, that gets it out there, a little more curl in his ball, there was room for that ball to roll off, and the rough wasn't terribly penal, and it wasn't very long. All of the interest, the high handicapper trying to score well, or the low handicapper trying to score well, excuse me, because all the intrigue is in the greens. You want to be on the right level. You don't want a downhill putt. And reading the grain. Now, they told us before we went out there that Old Mac and Sheep Ranch were undergoing regrassing on the greens. And we said, we don't care. We just want to see them. Which, so no real complaint there because we had full information ahead of time. But if you stick a nice, even a nice Bermuda grass or something on those greens, that just makes it more consistent. I think I'm going to score better. Now, Fred had no problem. He liked the, but again, it just, I just had a day. It was one of those weird days where I could not read the greens. The caddy and I did not mesh, on that. I should have just told him, like, just leave me alone. Just like point out the slope that I can't see and I'll figure it out. I think that's going to be my new thing going forward with caddies. Like, give me a general line. Something, is it going to go right to left or left to right? And I'll figure out the rest. Because that's an observation learned from Scotland, from Sand Valley, and from here now. Like, I love caddies giving me a line off the tee and telling me something about the green on my approach. But I almost want isolation on my putts. And but the greens were, to your point about kind of narrowing the field, and the greens were so big. And without any sand bunkers there, even if you're up around the greens, you could Texas wedge from far away. They're not big push-up greens. They're not nearly as penal and repulsive as packed dunes. Those would repel a ball. This was much more accepting. You could play the forward tees, or you could go set up a tee. The forward tees there, the blue tees, I'm looking at the scorecard, play at just over or just under 4,000 yards. You could go out there with a bunch of wedges and a putter and just be fine. You could have a field day. It'd be great with all those greens because you've got enough width. You don't, even if the wind's blowing, you could play that course with a putter. You'd probably break 100 from that distance. So to your point, yes, I think it absolutely it did not winnow it down to identify the real skill the way that trails and packed dunes would. I think it absolutely it's the most inviting. Yeah, just kind of you could knock it around and really pay no penalty. So Fred, I don't know if you've got something to add to that mash, but I think that's a good observation that it's the sheep ranch. You know, it almost would be. I wonder as far as order of play. Do you like something easier like that in the morning, or you want that in the afternoon when you're a little more tired? Because I'm thinking about flipping the order. Like, you know, Old Mac was our nice, you know, nice welcome handshake. Not a terribly difficult course, not a terribly long course. You know, abandoned dunes, packed dunes, trails really pack a challenge. Old Mac and Sheep Ranch, a bit more friendly. So you know, Fred, think about that a little bit. You know, you mentioned fatigue and the walking element. Would you order them differently in order to maximize sort of physical reserves?
So I think that this may have been a side conversation to that point with Matt at a sporting event or something for the kids. Exhausting or like fatigue part of it. I think if I were to go back, as much fun as I had with the banter and watching you guys, go through all of the iterations and how we're gonna play holes. If I were to go back and do that week again, I may have walked. I don't even know if I'd have walked. I would have wanted to walk and watch the preserve, but I may not go back and play the preserve again.
Right.
It was well worth it. I'm glad I did it now, but man, I think we talked about this already. That is probably one of the most demanding walks of any course I've ever played. And that was a short course or however you want to call it. I mean, that thing was, I mean, it was like a portal to hell.
Straight up and straight down, boys.
I mean,
And mind that
every
wind.
hole. Yeah. But to that point, I think personally, I would like to have, maybe some of those more challenging courses maybe earlier. I think my focus is probably a little bit better at that time. I'm getting older. I have a hard time keeping a thought in my head, let alone being, keeping my focus for 18 holes. I mean, that's hard enough to do anywhere I play. But I think I think there's something to that that I would probably like. I would enjoy that. I would like to go back and play those. Like I said, I would love to play, the trails again. That course is, I mean, that thing's up there on my all-time favorite courses ever. And I played like absolute dog pile. So yeah, I think I would switch up the order if I were to go back. I would, but I also have to say, I don't care if the wind is blowing 40 miles an hour on the sheep ranch. I don't think it matters when you play it. I mean, in the rotation is what I mean. In the afternoon, that course would absolutely be, that would probably be up there with the castle course for me on like just beating me down. Some of those holes are not very long. We've said that, right? I mean, I hit it, my little trap draw over that ravine. Dude, I wouldn't even have made it a quarter of the way over that thing if I had a 20 mile an hour wind in my face.
Right.
I mean, and when those greens get better, as we've talked about, they're not going to be able to cut those things, very, very tight. They're not going to be able to hold a lot of speed on those things. With 40 mile an hour wind, there's nothing to protect them. You would have your pace of play would probably go up by 20 minutes with people fighting the ball from rolling all over the green when they're trying to putt.
Oh yeah, they'll have to, get down to 7, 8, 9 territory, which
Oh,
they
yeah.
weren't lightning fast to begin with, but we're talking, that's what it was at Carnoustie. And we had a howler of a day there. The Ely, I don't remember the green speeds as well. Just too pretty to concentrate on something like that. But those greens, I couldn't adjust to the green speeds there because they were so slow, but they were slow because they had howling winds. They didn't want balls running off greens or taking curves out of play. What about you, Matt? You like your challenge good and early in the morning, or do you want to coast into your day?
I would sign up, especially now, having done it the way we've done it. I would probably flip-flop them just because it would be a different experience, right? I think getting to play trails in the morning, if maybe trails is the first thing, right? We played it last the first time, maybe we play it first the next time. And I think I would want to see Sheep Ranch in the afternoon. We played it in the morning and it was great. Now let's see what it's like at 40 miles an hour. So for our particular group, yeah, I would probably flip them next time just so we could get essentially the opposite experience. In a vacuum, I think there's probably something to be said to kind of, I'm probably going to be more ready to go at 7 in the morning. Despite not being a morning person, then I will on my second round of the day. So yeah, I mean, I think when we did Boyne back in the day, our very first round was Bay Harbor, right? And we were coming right out of the chute, and I think that was probably the right thing so yeah, I mean, I think in a vacuum that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm always torn on this. Like, I want to make my money off you guys falling apart and having the bu wheels come off the bus in the afternoon.
That's fair. That is a fair point, and I'm an easy mark when it comes to that.
and definitely, get a few transfusions in you for the putting course, or the cradle. I'm always gonna, yeah, that's always a good time.
Fred's an easy mark for that one. Yeah, you know your audience there, David.
Yeah. I see you always scribbling down notes and stuff. It's just off of camera, so I'd love to know. And I will say that if you flip these, I want to be in your two's group on our last round at Old Mac because I'm not making it up that hill on two. You guys are dragging my ass up there.
John Mark, we're gonna need that. We're gonna need that cart.
That's right.
Pick your bag up,
So take
Fred.
some of those pineapple things out of it and load Freddy up in there. Ready to go.
Sheep Ranch is fun. It's a re really relaxed. It's a really relaxed golf course. Like it's pretty. There's challenge, but you can just have fun, kind of staring off into the ocean. And I think that's a good homage to what was there, to the original behind the gate play all day. I mean, what a fantastic concept that. Hey, thanks for stopping by for this episode of the Blind Shots Podcast. One of my favorite short daydreams now is to think about what that land at Sheep Ranch must have been like in its original version, the quasi-golf course that you and a few buddies could rent for $100 a head for the entire day. No defined routing, just a giant playing field of green with greens. The ultimate choose-your-own-adventure golf. It's the kind of thing only really available on a core golf course, self-contained and unbroken with its own boundaries. For me, the ultimate romantic golf ideal. Play it in all directions. Stick a stick in the ground and make your own golf course, kind of the way the ancients did. For me, that daydream, that's what Sheep Ranch represents. So maybe it's a little more special than I gave it thought to when we started this episode. Regardless, I hope you enjoyed what you heard here today. If you didn't enjoy this episode, I'm sorry, I really am, and we will try to do better next time. In the meantime,
Remember to sit up straight and drink lots of water. And as always, when you have the choice, do decide to go for it and take dead aim.
Basically, yes, you are supposed to provide all sorts of energy for the kids to feed off of. And the other parents do an excellent job of that. And I stand there and watch my daughter and try to figure out what the hell it is she's doing.
See, I would be like you. That would be like at a rap or a music concert when they tell me to get up and get hype. Like, look, I paid right. You. You be hype.
Right. That's right.
You get me hype. I don't. That's not the way this works.